welcome to our weekly broadcast of Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. I'm Roy Richards, your dutiful host and guide to a brighter tomorrow. And whether you're only now approaching middle age or are firmly entrenched in your 40s or 50s, you can reawaken positive emotions and you can launch your journey to a secure, joyful, and positive second half of life on your own terms. If you don't like your job, whatever you do to earn a living, whether you're a leader or a follower, it kind of ruins everything else, doesn't it? If you're routinely tired, resentful, and stressed out at the end of each workday, it makes it pretty tough to enjoy a relaxing evening with the spouse and the kids. On a couple of recent shows, we discussed tactics for surviving a bad boss or a toxic workplace. But mere survival is not good enough. Why shouldn't you flourish during the workday and have a good time while earning a living? Contrary to conventional wisdom, you can have a good time while you're earning your livelihood. This week, we'll concentrate on the positive. Our guest today will talk about ways leaders can develop happier, more productive people, employees eager and willing to do their part in satisfying customers and in growing the business. Whether you're an executive, a middle manager, or an individual contributor, I'm certain you'll benefit from what she has to say. After all opinion leaders don't hold a formal management title. You can lead from down in the ranks as well. For a variety of reasons, in today's tough and constantly changing economy, a number of formerly great companies, large and small, are struggling to keep up with competition, maybe even survive. Kodak, Sears, and Research in Motion all come to mind. Other companies continue to thrive, like Apple and Southwest Airlines. Where does your business stand? So much of business success or failure depends upon employee morale, top to bottom. Compensation that is fair, competitive, and motivating is a major factor, but it's not enough. To paraphrase a common parental warning, here's one for the CEO. It's 11 p.m. Do you know where your employees are? Emotionally, that is. Our honored guest today contends that a company's success is determined primarily by employee quality of life. Contrary to conventional wisdom, in a recent blog on her website, she makes the point that leaders should focus first upon putting employees first. When employees are satisfied and fulfilled, when they are proud to tell friends and neighbors where they work and what they do, they will go out of their way to satisfy customers, thereby for certain creating customer satisfaction. Our guest is Monique Rees, founder and CEO of Market Smarter, a business advisory firm specializing in strategy, marketing, and organizational culture. She is also an affiliated executive faculty member at the Daniels College of Business, University of Denver, and is author of the new book, Real-Time Marketing for Business Growth, How to Use Social Media, Measure Marketing, and Create a Culture of Execution. Hello, Monique, and welcome to our program.
Hi, Roy. Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's get right into it here. One of the leaders' greatest challenges today is keep abreast of employee morale top to bottom and their motivation. Before bottom-line profits actually start to falter, are there early warning signs that employees are beginning to lose enthusiasm and maybe are lacking direction and that maybe our company is headed for decline?
Yes, actually employee discontent is a real good barometer, because if employees are unhappy, they're dissatisfied for some reason, that's going to lead to some high turnover, low morale. And that, of course, then leads into a direct impact on customer satisfaction and declining sales. So employees will always be one of the first barometers. And so one of the things a company could do is a culture assessment to understand where the current situation of their company stands.
Yeah, I know. Whenever I go into a company, you can sure as heck tell very quickly whether an employee doesn't really give a darn about the company or about your satisfaction.
Yeah, exactly. And how does that make you feel as a customer?
It makes you feel like you don't really want to be there.
Right. So That's how those two things are critically linked. And if customers then go away or they're not happy, that of course leads to lower profits and revenue.
Yeah. Well, in your book, you emphasize that building a great company culture is a secret to business growth and success. But I must confess, I worked for five major companies during my career, and I don't remember ever once being introduced to what the company culture was or even being told what we were all about. I guess you're just supposed to know that. Of course, four out of those five companies that I worked for are no longer in business, so there may be a clue there. But
I think there is. That's interesting. You know, it's company culture, a real simple way to define it is just how things get done in an organization. So there's a few that don't really go about defining it. But most companies that are doing extremely well will actually describe what the company culture is about, and that's almost always focused on company core values. So if a company is talking about their core values, what they believe in, and how that shows up in different employees' behavior, then that's a direct reflection of the company culture.
How do you get that down to the level of the individual employee? I know whenever there was a decree or something, you know, often it's written like this is our mission statement or something, and it seems way up there, but it really doesn't seem to impact me on a day-to-day basis, or at least in the crummy companies I was working for.
Right. And, I think we've all experienced as consumers walking into a store and we see a mission statement hanging on a wall.
Yeah.
And then we think, okay, this is not the experience I'm having right now, and don't want to be there. So a vision statement, a mission statement, values, those are the three things that I roll into a company purpose statement. And those are the things that really need to filter down to all ranks in the organization. So the difference between companies that have a really great, thriving company culture is that they're always talking about that. So they're always talking about what their values are. From a vision perspective, they have a CEO who is, that individual does not have to be charismatic and visionary necessarily, but they do need to know where the company's going and why. And Howard Schultz said it best. He said, the CEO of Starbucks, he said, people just want to work for a company that they know where it's going, that has a sense of purpose, that they like and trust.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they just really want to trust the leadership in that organization. And so it sounds like these are simple things, but actually having it show up in the company culture where people each have a different experience of what that means, it's really difficult to get that to filter down, and that's why it's really important to have strong communication programs, have a really strong leadership team that's always leading by example, and, of course, that somebody that they can trust.
Yeah, and you've got to get away from this fortress mentality that some company, I don't know if they have that this much these days, but when I, years ago, worked in a company, you wouldn't even go down to leadership row without an invitation. You'd have to put your jacket on. You usually didn't go without your boss or even your boss's boss. And the secretaries were outside and stood like guards at the gate.
Right.
Nobody just came in for a conversation. I know another good story about lack of communications. I talked to a guy recently that worked for a company where whenever the CEO came around to somebody's desk or in the area, supposedly to fraternize or ask how you're doing and stuff, these people would automatically pick up the phone and act like they were having a conversation. They wouldn't have to talk to their CEO.
Oh,
I think that's where the culture isn't working all that well.
Exactly. It's interesting to hear your stories that you're sharing, because this is one topic that it doesn't make any difference what company I'm talking with, but you bring up the topic of company culture, and it seems that people always have stories like that. And if they work for a company that they've had great experiences, and they'll be equally as passionate about talking about those great experiences, but more often than not, they have stories like yours to share where the culture was really, toxic.
Yeah. Well, what do I do if I lead an established business? Say I'm a new CEO, or maybe I've been around for a while, but I've had an awakening. And how do I, if I lead an established business that has a culture, but it's outdated and it doesn't really fit and it's not working today, how do I go about changing it?
What I would do is I would suggest to that CEO that he or she describe the kind of values. Start with the vision and the values. What kind of a company do they want to form? What's it look like? What would it look like 5-10 years from now? What kind of values would people have in terms of how they go about working together as teams and as individuals, and what kind of interaction that would lead to with customers?
Yeah, I was going to say, I love that example you painted. I don't forget if it was in your book or in your website about this company that told a story. The CEO or someone told a story of how the company would interact and with the new employees when they came on board. It sounded so impressive that not just words on a page, but describing just what the culture interaction would be like.
Yes. And actually, I love that story too. That individual, actually, he was leading a division of a company that, and he's probably the first person that really introduced me to company culture and how important it was. And we were part of at the time I was consulting to this organization, but they were part of a larger organization that was known for not having a great culture. And when he took over that division, it was faltering. It didn't stand for anything, really.
Yeah.
And so that's why he created that story. So it was a great story that described in detail what he was striving to achieve. So that was a real unique way of sharing a vision that really communicated how people would feel and what they would see. And so that's how he went about transforming that. But it takes a lot of hard work. So he would reiterate that at all hands meetings. That was followed with a culture assessment to understand how employees felt in different departments. And what he learned through that process, which was really interesting, because sometimes what we think, our assumptions about things, don't always turn out to be accurate. In that culture assessment, he discovered that his attitudes and beliefs were more in line with frontline, and that the pocket of that he really needed to work on was really his senior leadership team and some of their direct reports. So that's why it's some of these tools that are out there about in terms of measuring company culture can be really important in terms of knowing where to focus first and then what to do.
Yeah, there's so many leaders of companies that unfortunately just surround themselves with their little circles of their immediate advisors and don't really learn what's going on down in the ranks. And it's very interesting that this man determined that down in the ranks they were thinking more like him than the people right around him.
Exactly. And that point can't be stressed enough, because the leadership team, if there's even one individual at a senior leadership level that is not on board with the kind of company culture that they want to create, that is enough to create dissent as well. And I've experienced that firsthand when I was working with a large Fortune 500 company, and one of the very top people in this company, number three in charge, came up to me one day when I was working on a culture program and said, "So why are you working on this fluffy people shit?" And I just looked at him and I was like, "You got to be kidding."
that hits the nail on the head, because I remember so much as an employee when we talk about this crap that top management, you'd see this on the wall, like you said, or something that pronouncement made on high, and nobody down in the ranks that had to deal with customers or make the company work really gave a damn what some guy up in corporate heaven had to say.
Right.
And also that you mentioned constantly reaffirming it. I can remember employee orientations where maybe they went through some mission statement or corporate culture, and that's the last you heard about that for years.
Right, exactly. Or sometimes if they're, the values are written down on, you know, a piece of paper, and they show them to you the first day you go to work for a company, and you, that's the last time you see them.
Well, and employee benefits and all the other good stuff they hand out.
Yeah, you know, so I'll give you an example of a company that does a really great job with values that might help your listeners really understand how to, you know, what to do with values so they're beyond just something on a written piece of paper. The Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company, they have had a fabulous program for developing their mission and vision and what they're all about. They roll those into a document they call the name of it just eluded me. It's their golden principle. So their values that they've created over time, those values, each week what they do is they send them around. There's a piece of communication that goes out to each of the hotels, and then those hotels are responsible for talking about those values in their daily lineup. So what they'll do is they'll bring together, you know, because employees work on different shifts, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, these are hourly wages, and people from the Ritz-Carlton, they go through, a pretty arduous process with hiring. But once they're on board, they really spend some time training with them. So part of that training is 15 minutes a day in their values. So in this daily lineup, they'll talk about, here's what's going on at the hotel today, and our value for today is blah, blah. And they'll say what that value is, and then they will give an example of an employee that lived that value. So it could be from a hotel anywhere in the world. It might be somebody that's right there in that hotel.
That's great when they personalize it.
Yeah. So the difference here is they personalize it and they give an example. So if somebody were actually living that value, how would that show up? What would it look like? How would they behave? And then that starts to stick, and people begin to see that, this is what they mean by that. Mm. So that's how they become more than just, you know, words on a piece of paper.
You gave us a company of a good company that gets it. Do you have any examples of companies that don't get it, that don't
oh, gosh.
Well with quality of life?
There's so many. I think, you know, one that most people can relate to, is the airline industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I ask people what company is a great example of company culture, they always say Southwest Airlines.
Yeah.
You mentioned that earlier.
I said that, yeah.
Yep, exactly. And if I say, mention one that you don't like that gives really terrible customer service, almost always the answer that comes up, well, I'll see what you say. What would you say?
I'd say Delta because I had a personal problem with it.
Okay. I get that answer occasionally, but I would say 99% of the time I hear United.
Yeah, well, I've had problems with them in the past, too.
Yeah, 99% of the time I hear United Airlines. And, so you kind of wonder why they don't get it. And, you know, a few years ago when they started their airline, the subsidiary TED. Do you remember TED?
No, not really.
Not really? So that was the competitor for Southwest Airlines. It was the no-frills.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. I just forgotten the name. But.
Yes, well, TED died an early death, so it didn't work out for them. But they were trying to copy Southwest Airlines.
Yeah.
And so they could copy fast turnaround. They could copy no-frills. You know, the things that looked, you know, on a surface level like Southwest, but what they couldn't copy was the culture.
No.
So the reason people are willing to have
transform your employees either,
right,
make them TED employees.
Right. So you've just got to, that's why, you know, that's a really good example of why company culture is so important. You can talk about it all you want in a strategy, and it can sound good, it can look good on paper, all the numbers can work out, but it falls apart if, you know, when it actually comes time to execute it, when employees aren't on board.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know,
it's... You talk the talk, but you better walk the walk.
You know, it took me a long time. I'd say, you know, 20 years of my career to really get focused on company culture, because I've been working in business and marketing planning most of my life and developing strategies. But I realized that companies could still develop an amazing strategy to win in the market and fail. And so I kept going back and saying, well, why? Why does that occur? Or if the CEO said, you know, our people don't know how to execute. And I said, well, what's that about? You know, it's not that they don't know how to execute. It's that they don't understand what to do.
Yeah.
95% of companies do not, of the employees in their company do not understand their company strategy.
Yeah, I love in your book when you talk about the culture of execution, because even if they do understand it on an intellectual basis, if they're not understanding how to execute it, it doesn't do much good.
Yeah. So if there's a quarterly all-hands meeting that talks about strategy, that's not enough.
No.
It needs to be talked about all the time, and that has to filter down. So if that's coming from the executive team, it's got to filter down to the managers that have teams of people, so that they can start to connect what their department does to the organization's overall goals, and then ultimately connect that to the individuals, individuals' specific activities and what they do.
And you don't just do that once a year in those negative annual performance reviews either.
No. In fact, performance feedback is shown to be incredibly important to culture and to reducing turnover. Most people leave because their managers don't give them feedback, if you can believe that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Or they don't like their manager.
Well, veteran employees over 40, those of us over 40 are often considered dinosaurs set in our ways. How best can a leader motivate seasoned veterans to accept, a culture change, or to initiate, maybe even initiate, at least accept change on a daily basis? Make the old economy conformist in the new economy thinkers. How do you do that?
Yeah, that's tough to do. So there's a couple of different ways to do this. When I was working with, I used to work for Avaya, and Avaya was a spinoff of from Lucent, and all of these Ma Bell companies were eventually part of they used to be all part of one another. So the great thing about that company is that they were known, the Bell Lab group within that company, which was all of the seasoned veterans. And 40, 50 would have been young, probably for a lot of those folks. but they had won so many patents, so they had so much respect in the organization.
Yeah.
And then there was the new people that were coming in. And so one of the things that we did was look at trying to use the people that had the seasoned experience as an example and actually talk about that legacy.
Yeah.
So it's really important to honor the past.
Yeah,
as well as talk about where our company's going.
Honor the past, but they've also got to be a bridge to the present and the future.
Yes, and so when they could develop a mentoring program. They can pair them together with somebody that's new in the company, and they can both teach each other.
Yeah,
and
I like to talk about appointing deputy agents of change among your seasoned veterans. We want to help you change and bring on new employees and teach them new ways.
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. So that's a great way to start change in an organization is start small, find a group of people that really get it. They really understand and stand behind where the company's going and what they're trying to achieve, and that they're real passionate about creating a new company culture. And then you can put some specific tasks in those people's hands, and they start to get people around them excited and engaged, and it is a groundswell from there. So that's a really good way to begin an organizational change effort.
Well, where does employee empowerment fit in? Do most employees today, in your experience, really seek additional responsibility when it's accompanied by added accountability for results? Do most people really, I know that's the buzzword, that empowerment's a big buzzword, but I wonder if that's what people really want.
Well, I think people really do want empowerment. They want to be able to make decisions and not be micromanaged. So there's got to be some sort of a framework for making decisions so that both the manager and employees feel comfortable with them making their own decisions. And, you know, if a company wants, I don't know of a company that doesn't want to be more innovative. But so if a company wants to be, yeah, so if a company wants, you know, innovation, then, you know, what are some of the things that they would have to do to be innovative? What are some of the behaviors that people would have to exhibit? Well, one of those things would be risk, you know, a willingness to take risk. So they have to show that by example. You know, they can call out somebody in a meeting and say, here's what so-and-so did. And you know what? It failed. But, you know, but the intention was good. And here's what was good about that. So that they're celebrating some of those, you know, failures, if you will. There's some companies that actually give trophies for stuff like that.
you should celebrate failure. If somebody's trying to better the conditions and do something in a better way and it doesn't work out, that they're still trying, and that's a big plus.
Yes, and then, you know, sometimes it's swept under the rug, right?
Yeah.
But if they can actually share what didn't work and share that with others in the organization who are probably going to try the same thing, at a later date, it will actually really help everyone else perform their jobs much better because they're learning from one another.
What did work and what didn't work and why you think it didn't work, those are all important aspects, and how it could be changed maybe the next time.
Yeah. So usually, you know, if something didn't work, let's say it's a company that's trying to win a new customer. Let's say that they lose the deal. What usually happens is you get all the salespeople on the call who go with their, you know, tail between their legs and, you know, call out everything that they did wrong, and it never goes beyond that group. But instead, if they talked about that in a larger context of here's what we could do, there's almost always ideas. I'll say always. There's always ideas from others in the organization that will say, well, here's what we could do next time. And, you know, they're dealing with the problem at a different level or from a different perspective, so they'll have other things to add to that conversation.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, we're just about out of time, but say I'm over 40 and looking for a satisfying new job. Either I'm out of work or I want to get out of work where I am now. In seeking employment, what should I look for in an employer? What signs will tell me if the company's really concerned about quality of life and really wants me to have a balanced life? And are there easy, like, warning signs or telltale signs that tell me not to go with a certain employer?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the great thing about social media and everything being online now is that it's easy to check. Yeah. So, I mean, there's websites like reputation.com and things like that. But a site that is really great to look at is Glassdoor. So Glassdoor.com. And there's reviews that are written there by real employees that either used to work there or currently employed there. And there will be a rating for the CEO. And so looking at that CEO rating, number one, that's really important. Do they believe in that individual? But go through, I would say, you know, go through the, you know, just scan the various comments from employees. And you can get a real good picture inside that company. And then once they're in the job interview, I would, you know, the question I would always ask, not up front and first, but certainly in that first interview, I would always ask, how would you describe your company culture? Because that, you know, that's so important. And just asking that simple question, you know, sometimes they get a manager that will just stammer around that. They don't know how to answer it. That's a red flag.
Like the ones I used to work for.
Yeah. I mean, if a company can't describe it, then that's not a good sign.
It also makes you sound very interested in the company and very intelligent as a interviewee that you ask that kind of question.
Right.
It makes you know that you really want to contribute and you want to make sure you fit with the company culture and your goals are the same as theirs.
Exactly.
Well, that glassdoor.com sounds like a fascinating website. I wonder how many negative comments are on there by people that are still employed by a company.
I think that there are several. It's pretty transparent. So people post interviews, and it doesn't have their name associated with it. It may have just a title. Other times they do post it. So there's that site, and there's others that are like that.
Well, before we go, tell us about your latest book, Real Time Marketing for Business and Growth, where people can best purchase that book.
Yeah, they can go to my website, which will direct them to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or a number of other sources. The website is marketsmarter.com. Market Smarter 1-1, uh-huh. And then they can get directed from the homepage there to Amazon. Or people can also email me, which is Monique, M-O-N-I-Q-U-E, at Market Smarter.
Okay. Yeah, that your book sounded very interesting. It's all about using social media, and it talks at length about culture. It sounds like a book that both leaders and people down in the ranks would get a lot of benefit from studying, especially if they're in the marketing area.
That was my intention. I really tried to put together 20, 25 years of experience about what works, what doesn't, so I could give some good information to people about the shortcuts they could take, what they need to emphasize, so that they can really create great strategies to win in the market while also creating a great company culture.
Yeah, no, I'd highly recommend that. Not that I didn't have
time
to read the full thing, but I did go through a pretty extensive review of the summary and some of the other items that were in the website, and I would highly recommend that. I also would like to recommend my book if you're the leader of a company that, or work for a company that's kind of lagging or maybe slipping a bit. It's all about recreating and re-energizing your business. My book's title is Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. It contains a comprehensive roadmap for empowering and motivating employees, concentrating on your primary asset, the loyal, seasoned employees who have brought you to where you are today. You can order my book, either print or ebook, from Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. or from our website, www.middleagerenewal.com. Well, Monique Reese, thank you so much again for being our guest today. You have a compelling message, and enterprise leaders definitely should listen.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
And that's our program for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Roy Richards. And once again, repeat after me with passion, middle age will be my best age.